Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
This is John. It's 10:09 on WGN. We're in the Allstate Skyline studio overlooking a beautiful downtown Chicago. I expect it's nice where you are and going to be warm enough for everybody this weekend, including that alligator in the Humboldt Park Lagoon. Finally, I saw somebody post this week. It must have been yesterday. Are the alligators 15 minutes up? Because we've all had a lot of fun with this story, but I think some of you are getting to be a little tired of it. As the alligator remains elusive, two things come to mind. One is you hope he's okay. I mean, I'm rooting for Chance the Snapper. I want him to do well. I want him to be captured safely and survive. But also, I've been thinking all along that I kind of am rooting for the guy. I want him to sort of evade capture the same way you used to root for Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid or any of the Ocean's 11 cast, say. There's sort of a certain joy of rooting for those guys to get away with it. And now we've got this renegade alligator. There's a couple of pieces in the news this morning wondering if, in fact, they should close the Humboldt Park Lagoon to keep it safe from people. But I don't know. I think the whole city's, in a fun way, been overreacting to Chance the Snapper. And by the way, God bless whoever came up with Chance the Snapper. Croc Obama was good. Chance the Snapper probably best. By the way, Vivian, on, let's see, today is Saturday, Friday. I think it was Thursday that we sent our intern Jay over to see if he could find it. Jay brought back a lot of interesting audio for us, and a summary of that sounds a little bit like this. So we sent Jay, our intern, to the Humboldt Park Lagoon to see if he could at least report to us what the search is like for Chance the Snapper.
Standing next to me right now is Billy Ocasio. He is the director of National Museum of Puerto Rican Arts and Culture, and the museum is actually right next to the lagoon.
Oh, it's very good for us. You know, we got a lot of people coming by.
Mike, you're on WGN Radio.
Back in the 60s, I grew up in Humboldt Park area, and I caught two alligators, 1 3-foot and 1 over 5-foot. Plus, I caught 6 piranhas. At first, I thought they were big-ass bluegill, but then when I started taking a look out, I seen the teeth, and then that's when I knew they were piranhas.
How do you catch the alligators?
I wrapped my shirt around my hand, the 3-footer. It bit me. I flung it to shore, and my cousin stepped on it when it was on its back.
Bob the alligator hunter is actually charged with catching the dang thing. Bob, this is John. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Just a little tiring with all the commotion going on here. We usually try to keep these type of things quiet so that it doesn't become a media circus like this.
Bob, I want you to know the mayor was asked about you today, and she's feeling great confidence that you're going to get the job done. She said you're up to it, and she feels good about the fact that you're in charge.
We just happen to like reptiles, and because we study them, I've gotten very good at it.
Yes, I think I understand what they're trying to say in the song. That there's a crocodile in the Humboldt Park Lagoon, and that they don't know whether it has papers or not.
Oh, that's good. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of your show. I'm glad I finally called. I texted you many times, like on your show on different topics, but I figured now I'll call it in.
So Luis called in on Thursday to interpret for us a locally produced song about the alligator and who's on the run, maybe from ICE agents because the alligator doesn't have papers. So we had a chuckle about that, but it's not funny today. There's a rally that will include thousands of people just a few blocks from where we're standing right now at 11 o'clock this morning. It's the anti-immigration roundup rally, and that's taking place at Daly Plaza at 11. And then late tonight, early tomorrow morning, ICE agents will fan out across 10 major American cities. Chicago is one of them, and they will be rounding people up. They say the witching hour is between 3 and 5 a.m. That's when people are still asleep, and they'll knock on the door, and they'll grab these people and maybe their children, and they'll cart them off to wherever, and maybe they should, maybe they should not. But that's what Chicago is bracing itself for today. And the Chicago Sun-Times, they're no big fan of this. They wrote, according to a study by the New American Economy, that's a bipartisan research group, a fifth of the country's cooks and 24% of the maids and house cleaners are undocumented. I'm not surprised to hear that, are you? 36% of all agricultural workers are undocumented. I wonder how many good, legitimate businesses that do landscaping and roofing and road work and house cleaning. I wonder how many good, legitimate businesses in Chicago that do those things have people who they know are not documented on their payroll or are somehow getting paid and whose customers are thrilled to have them because they do a good job. I don't see the value in rounding these people up in the middle of the night and carting them off. I do see the value in finding a way to address this situation. Of course, we've got to do something about it. We need to find a way to legalize these people, to patriate these people, to reasonably get the bad ones out, and most of them are not. But we've decided that they're the problem, and so we're going after them tonight. Big rally at 11 o'clock this morning in Daly Plaza about that. And we'll talk more about that at 11:30 this morning as it's going on. Mincing Rascals, our award-winning podcast, went up Thursday at 5, and we'll broadcast part of that a little after 11 o'clock this morning. And then we'll talk to Eric Larson. Actually, we'll talk to Eric Larson before that in about 20 minutes. Eric Larson is the only man to, in 1 year, climb Mount Everest, go to the North Pole, and go to the South Pole. He did that all in 12 months. And here you're happy that you ran a 5K. No one's ever done that before. There is an event in town, Outside Adventure. It's at McCormick Place. It's for people that are adventurers and like to do things outside. And they've got a whole weekend going on. He'll be speaking there tomorrow at 12:30. He'll say hi to us in about 20 minutes. Boy, he's got stories to tell. Oh, and by the way, Joe Brand, I'm reading another really good book full of a lot of stories. I'm going to have to loan you this or get you one of these as well.
And is it Ball 4?
No, but I've been thinking about him. How do you say his last name? Jim Bouton?
I believe that's right, yeah.
And he wrote maybe one of the first great sports baseball books. I mean, kind of the contemporary version of those things with warts and all. All four. He's passed away at the age of something or another, 80-something?
Sounds about right.
The new book is by, and by the way, this guy's in his 80s, Bud Selig, former baseball commissioner, for the good of the game. The inside story of the surprising and dramatic transformation of Major League Baseball. Bud Selig was the commissioner of baseball in the steroids era. He was also the commissioner of baseball when it went from $1 billion to $13 billion. So while he says, I am the steroid commissioner, and I have to accept that even though I don't like it, it's not my fault. We weren't as naive as you think. He was the commissioner when Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire were hitting home runs. I mean, just think about that. But he said, we also transformed the business model to make small and medium markets more competitive. And we were the ones that saved the business and really made it flourish the way it is today. And by the way, he said, we have the most comprehensive, strictest drug testing of all the major sports. And that happened on my watch, too. A little late to the game, say some.
It's got to be tough to be a commissioner for any sport because you pretty much are always just given a bad rap from the beginning. Nobody likes the boss. And, you know, any sport, they go up to the draft or any type of event, they get booed. And Bud Selig always got a bad rap because of the steroid era and him being attached to it. But also the whole controversy with the All-Star Game. So I'd really like to get an insight on everything he had to say about it all.
Well, the All-Star Game does not anymore produce the home field advantage, right?
Right.
Okay, so he writes about that, and he said, okay, it was the 11th inning of the All-Star Game in 1990-something, 80-something. What year was it?
I've got it. It was 2002 that
was
they
2002
that they ended in a tie, yes.
What did they go to, Joe? The 11th inning, I think it was.
Yeah, I thought it was the 12th, but yeah, I think the 11th.
They were out of All-Star pitchers. They weren't going to throw guys longer than they wanted to because these guys have got to be ready after the All-Star break, and they weren't going to throw position players. And so both managers decided at the conclusion of the 11th or 12th inning of that All-Star game. Well, we'll just quit here. And you had a stadium full of people, and they start throwing trash onto the field and booing. They did not have a contingency plan. It's hard to imagine, but that just kind of happened recently, right?
It was the 11th inning, 7-7 tie, yeah, at Miller Park. Joe Torre, and he was the manager for the American League, so 2001. Oh, and Bob Brenly, because he was the manager for the Diamondbacks.
And folks lost their minds, so they said, okay, to make the All-Star game more relevant after that game, we're going to, because clearly it's not relevant. It's so important, you don't even finish the game. So unimportant. So they said, okay, we'll use it to determine home field advantage for the World Series. That was short-lived, though. We don't do that anymore. Thank goodness, because whatever it is, it shouldn't do that.
That lasted until 2016. The Cubs and Indians played the last World Series where it was predicated by who won the All-Star game. And a lot of people think that worked out in the Cubs' favor because that was when Kyle Schwarber had his whole resurgence. They could place him in as a designated hitter for the majority of the games because four of them were in Cleveland in American League rules. You know what they did in our Midwest League? They did, if the All-Star game was tied after nine innings, they had a home run derby for the sudden death. And that idea has kind of been brought up, and people diminish it right away, saying, oh, you know, it's just an aspect of the game. But what's so cool is they had the opposing team right near the batter's box heckling the home run hitter, like just screaming at him while he's trying to hit home run after home run.
So this is if the All-Star game was a tie?
This was the Midwest League, yeah, single-A
sure,
baseball.
Sure, single-A. And that happened? It was a tie, so you guys
it was. It was tied at three, and it ended up being just a home run derby of a final score of 2-1. But, well, yeah, it was kind of like a shootout.
What a fun. No, that sounds like fun to me. I mean, it's Class A ball. What the heck? Let's give it a try. They had a bunch of interesting new rules in some of the minor leagues this year that we've talked about. Now, one other thing about Bud Selig's book, it's called For the Good of the Game. Doris Kearns Goodwin writes the preface. She's great, and she's a baseball fan, too. But the first chapter is about him having to follow Barry Bonds around as Barry Bonds was getting ready to break Hank Aaron's home run record. And Hank Aaron did it the right way, and obviously Barry Bonds cheated. But he was going to end up breaking the record. And that made Selig crazy because he was a big Hank Aaron friend and fan. And in fact, as the owner of the Brewers, employed Hank Aaron for the latter part of his career. Last 30 or 40 home runs that Aaron hit, he hit his in Milwaukee. So this guy was like a great Aaron fan. And it was killing him that this smug, unhappy, cheating Bonds is going to break the record. And as the commissioner of baseball, he felt he had to be there. So he's hopscotching all around the country. And Bonds was in a drought, was in a slump. He wasn't hitting home runs for like 30, 40 at-bats, which is a lot by his standards. So here's Selig going to San Francisco and then to New York and flying around the country, waiting for this momentous event to happen. And it was just killing him. He just hated it. He had some baseball meetings that he had to tend to, so he had to miss a game, and he was hoping that Bonds would hit a couple of home runs while he was away because he did not want to be there or associated with it in any way. The book is called For the Good of the Game, and I'm going to talk to him on Monday. I'm looking forward to that. It's 10:22. Oh, baseball's back. Isn't that nice? Incidentally, Chicago is a great city, and you probably knew that if you spent 10 seconds downtown or in the outlying areas. Isn't it just a beautiful city, and there's so many things to do? And we mentioned this earlier in the week, that TripAdvisor asked its users to rank all of the tours that they've been on or to give them their best tour, right? So if you toured the Sistine Chapel, rate that. If you did the architecture boat tour in downtown Chicago, rate that. And as it turns out, our architecture boat tour was number two in the world. And tours of the Sistine Chapel and the Vatican were number one. I've got the list, but we had some fun with this week. And I asked the travel agent that we do a lot of business with here, Sue Kelly, who travels across the world, to give me her list. I was thinking as I was reading that, well, I've traveled a little bit. I can tell you that for my family and I, the bus tour at night of the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., where they take you around for 2 hours to the monuments is spectacular. We did an open Jeep tour in the desert in Arizona near Tucson, and that was really fun. I would put the ruins of Ephesus on the list of top five things I've ever seen or done. I would say lunch on the deck at the Eiffel Tower has to be on there. And walking across a glacier in Alaska was sure memorable for my family. But that's me, and I've obviously traveled a little bit, but not as much as Sue. Sue, what's on your list after this? Outdoor Adventure Show at McCormick Place is underway today, 12:30 tomorrow. The only man to have summited Mount Everest and been to the North and South Pole in the same year on his own joins us at 10:40 to tell us some of the tales he'll be telling tomorrow at McCormick Place. And one other fun note, my friend Sue Kelly's on a phone line. She's the proprietor of Kelly Cruises. We do a lot of listener trips with Kelly Cruises. We're doing one at the end of this month, in fact. Hi, Sue. How are you?
Good morning, John. I'm great. How are you?
Good. So, let me just do the USA. Chicago Architecture River Cruise, number one, according to TripAdvisor. Number one tour in America. The Red Rock Canyon Electric Bike Tour of Las Vegas is number two. Off-roading in Utah is number three. A private walking tour in New York City is number four. And a small group guided tour in Austin, Texas is number five. That's in the USA. Internationally, they say the Basilica Tour is one, the Architecture Tour in Chicago is two, a one-day sightseeing tour in Florence is number three. Go 5-1 for me. What's your fifth best tour you've ever done?
Okay, well, I have to agree with you, John. First of all, the fact that I've done any of these that I'm talking about, I think I'm one of the luckiest people in the world.
Yeah.
And the last name of Kelly doesn't have anything to do with it, but these are my top five. So I would agree with you. My number five would have to be Ephesus. I loved Ephesus. I would go back in 2 seconds, walking those white marbled streets with the Celsus Library, and you know this is where Paul preached. You know, this is those terrace houses that they're uncovering now.
Yeah, condominiums that are 2,000 years old. It's unbelievable.
Yes, it's like it's like the Michigan Avenue, what they're uncovering right now. And having been in those terrace houses within this Ephesus, you know, within all of Ephesus, which was all, you know, covered by rocks for all of these years, and they've uncovered this all. And they were in there, and they were with these tiny little chisels. They were uncovering what was a pool. The Ephesians lived right. You know, they had these beautiful homes, and they had pools, and they were all beautifully decorated. And we were watching them uncover these little stones one by one. And I think that just... that blew my mind, that they could still be uncovering this and the way that they lived. So that was my number five.
Ephesus, Turkey. The ruins of Ephesus, Turkey. Give me number four.
Number four, the Hawk Walk at Ashford Castle. Absolutely thrilling. One of the neatest things we've ever done as a family. Loved it. The Ireland School of Falconry is located at Ashford Castle. And you are out there walking through the forest with your arm extended in this great, big, gigantic leather glove. And this hawk is, you're understanding what they do and how they do it and how they're trained. And you throw the food up and the hawk goes and gets it and he comes back and he lands on your arm. And you're in this gorgeous, beautiful setting. Absolutely stunning.
And the hawk doesn't take your ear?
No, thankfully they're smart and they're very well trained, and so no, they did not walk away with a nose or an ear or a limb or anything. They liked to eat the rat. They were not interested in my left arm, so we were lucky there.
Okay, hold on. Wait. It's 10:31. Can you finish this with me on the other side of the news?
Of course.
Sue Kelly from Kelly Cruises. I just realized I'm going to be late to the news as it is. Let's pause here. And Maple will update you on the latest from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Then Sue will get you 3-2-1 After this, it's 1040 on WGN. John Williams here. We're in the Allstate Skyline studio. In just a couple of minutes, Eric Larson, who's climbed Mount Everest and has been to both poles in the same year, joins us. But speaking of adventure, I asked Sue Kelly from Kelly Cruises, who does a lot of cruising with you, WGN listeners, to give me her top five best adventures ever. Best tour destinations. TripAdvisor said that the river cruise up and down the Chicago River, the architecture boat tour, is number two in the world, only second to the Sistine Chapel and the Vatican tours. And by the way, I'm looking out my window here in the 18th story window down on that river. The boats are packed. It's a beautiful day to be in the city. Okay, Sue, so you said number five was the ruins of Ephesus in Turkey, walking along the ancient white marble streets. Number four was in Ireland at the School of Falconry, where the bird lands on your arm. What's number three?
Number three, John, is sunrise at the Taj Mahal. That is a must. That is a bucket list adventure if ever there was one. And it was so interesting. We had come in the day before and seen it during the day, and then we were there at sunrise. And to see the Taj Mahal and to see it change colors, it is a marvel unlike anything you could even imagine. And you could hear a pin drop as the sun rises, and it changes the color of this magnificent building. Absolutely incredible. And then you have to be out there. You've got to have your camera ready, and then you've got to get in your Warrior II pose and get your picture in front of the Taj Mahal. It is stunning. It is worth, it is worth getting up at 4 a.m. for, absolutely.
Number two,
speaking of sunrise, we're going to get up really early one other time, and we're going to do a sunrise balloon ride over the Masumara. Cue the Lion King music. There is nothing more incredible.
Where is this?
This is in Kenya, in Africa. We're going to do a balloon ride. We did this balloon ride over the Masai Mara, this gorgeous game reserve. So you go up in the big giant balloons, and it's still dark out. And you watch the sunrise from the balloons, and then down below it starts to come to life. And then you see all of the greenery. And then you start to really look, and you see, well, wow, we're dipping down low. Why is the balloon going so low? Because the giraffes are right there below you. I mean, it's just, and there's the family of all of the elephants with their babies.
Wow.
It's the most, that just, it's peaceful. It's gorgeous. You're watching these herds, and this is all as the sun is rising.
All right, wait, that's number two.
That's number two.
Number one.
So number one for me kind of chokes me up a little bit, John, and we will see this together in just a couple of weeks, but the American Cemetery in Normandy is just, I personally think every American should see it. I really do. It's emotional. It's stirring. It is truly hallowed ground, but you are right there where this all happened. And so you understand the enormity and the difficulty that they had, but it is so moving and beautiful. I think every American should see that. So that's my number one.
That's an interesting list, right? I'm going to, after the show, type those up, post them on my page with some links. I hate this about this, but I'm now going to give you and I a plug, and that's not why I asked you to do this, but you and I are leading an excursion with Brenda and a bunch of GN listeners up the River Seine to Normandy at the end of this month. I understand there are two berths available in our AMA Waterways boat, and if folks wanted to join us on that, they sure could. I'm already goosebumpy about it. That's Sue Kelly from Kelly Cruises. Okay, Sue, what a great list.
Thanks, John. Thanks for letting me share mine. And it's going to change because we all have so many other places. That's the beauty of travel, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe I'll come back with something different this time. Kelly Cruises.
There you go.
KellyCruises.com is the link for my trip with you. We'll talk to you another day, Sue.
All right. Thanks, John. Take care.
Wow. 1044. Hey, Eric Larson. Talk about travel. Listen to this guy's story after this. 1048 and 82 degrees, up to 90, the forecast in the news in about 15 minutes here on WGN Radio. The Mincing Rascals award-winning podcast broadcast after the news. The Outside Experience event is going on at McCormick Place. And tomorrow, one of the people there is Eric Larson, not the author, but the adventurer, the only man, as I understand it, to ever climb the peak of Mount Everest and go to both poles in the same year. I talked to him just before the show and said, you must be a guy who likes cold weather. His business card says Polar Explorer.
Yeah, one of them, first and only, yeah. You know, I think my wheelhouse is long, freezing, cold supper fest. So if there's a cold or snow or below zero temperatures, I'm generally there, which is why I like the Midwest a lot.
Yeah, you should come here in February. We'll treat you right. Do people, when they discover that, first ask which was the most arduous, which was the most difficult challenge?
Yeah, people ask that quite a bit. Personally, the North Pole expedition is probably one of the most difficult expeditions on the planet. Everest is definitely a challenge. The overall kind of severity of the constant cold and intensity of the Arctic Ocean and the North Pole expedition makes it one of the most difficult.
You've quoted others who have called the North Pole the horizontal Mount Everest. I always thought it would be Mount Everest would be the most difficult because it's, you know, climbing the tallest mountain, and that the South Pole might be a close second because it was the coldest place. I'm surprised to hear you say North Pole.
Antarctica is a desert, and you're traversing an ice cap, which is ice on land. And so the ice that you're traveling on in snow is relatively stable, and the conditions, even though it's cold, are dry. And so the environment, while it's harsh and formidable, is relatively constant. Mount Everest, while the altitude is intense and there are, you know, some severe hazards there, I think that the Arctic Ocean is such a dynamic place because the ice is constantly moving. You've got open water, you've got extreme cold, polar bears, you know, even when we would set up our tent at night, we would sometimes wake up and be 2 miles farther south than where we went to sleep because that ice is moving as well.
That's got to be discouraging.
Yeah, it's like traveling on a conveyor belt. So mentally, the challenge of that adventure is equally as difficult as the physical challenge.
And there's a lot I wanted to ask you about, but just tell me about a climb of Mount Everest, particularly in light of the death toll the mountain took this year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan of adventure in whatever capacity, and if it's just doing something in your backyard or in the North Woods of the Midwest. And so, you know, if people are interested in climbing Mount Everest, I think that they should do that. Obviously, there's some probably regulation that needs to happen there. For me, I actually had a little bit different experience, or actually night and day experience, than what you saw on the news in that I was climbing in the fall season. And a lot of people don't realize there's actually two summit windows for Everest, the most popular being in May. And the kind of little bit more difficult, less popular is in the fall. And so when I was on the mountain, it was basically just my small team of Sherpas and myself. So we were five people in the entire mountain. And on my Instagram, I actually superimposed a picture of my view from the South Summit versus the popular one that was going around. And in my view, there was just nobody.
Well, you're right. We're all familiar with the other picture, and maybe not yours, but that long line of climbers on the ridge. And it's maybe heartbreaking, or maybe I can imagine how frustrating it was for those people. And I also think it makes people a little angry. They question the sanity of, or the sense of, those people. It's like you're putting yourself and other people in harm's way.
Well, and the hard part to realize with any of these adventures is that it's an uncontrolled situation. And as much as you can try to mitigate some of the variables, you're still at the mercy of the weather conditions and several other factors. And so the reality is, you know, this year on Everest, you just had a smaller weather window. And so those similar amounts of climbers to previous years were kind of channeled into a smaller weather window, which kind of resulted in that crowding.
So why all of this? What are you doing here? Is this research? Is this an occupation? Are sponsors paying you? What's going on here?
Yeah, I love that question, by the way, because I've still been trying to figure it out for 20 years. Why? I think part of it is just how I was built. You know, I actually grew up in Wisconsin. And what do we have? Like I said, what do we have in the Midwest? We have cold winters. And so it's an environment that I feel like I understand. I also like the physical and mental challenges of doing these bigger, unique expeditions. And for me, I'm trying to push the leading edge of adventure in challenging ways. And so whether it's stringing together a series of objectives or doing something in a harder style, that's kind of what my path is. And then I think overall, I have a focus that's really trying to help people better understand these places. I think adventure is a really powerful tool to connect people to these places and help them better understand how they're important to us.
Yeah. What should we know about the polar caps?
Well, I mean, the bottom line on the polar ice caps is that they're changing dramatically due to climate change, and our actions are the cause of that. And it's really up to us to make change now. So that's the important thing. I also think equally important, we need to really embrace ice, cold, and snow. And that's a huge part of my focus as well. Like ice and snow, the polar ice caps, these are important parts of a healthy environment.
Hmm. Embrace ice, cold, and snow. Do you think we actually see those as things, problems to be mitigated rather than things that we need to preserve?
I do. I think people have an adversarial nature with winter. I mean, I got to say, like, I don't like being cold either, but I think it's a pretty incredible season. I think on the recreation side, there are a lot of great opportunities to be outside and experience our environment and be comfortable in the cold. And I think when we understand that winter, that cold is an important part of our environment and the healthy environment, I think then we make those connections to the polar ice caps, to the glaciers, to all these things that are changing.
Could you just take me to one of your travels and give me a scene where you thought, wow, the environment is changing or something was exceptional?
Well, I've done more polar expeditions than any American in history. My first North Pole expedition was in 2006, and I did another expedition in 2014. I've been down to Antarctica for 10 years, the Himalayas many times, and so there are a series of moments, I would say, that are pretty dramatic. However, you know, most dramatic, I think, is the Arctic Ocean and the character and nature of the sea ice and how that's changing. And my 2014 North Pole expedition realistically will be the last ever North Pole expedition from land to the North Pole because of climate change. Imagine if Mount Everest got bulldozed over. There would be a huge outcry. But yet the Arctic Ocean is melting dramatically. It's going to be ice free in the summer in as little as 30 years. And so that iconic adventure that's been one of the defining moments of my life, my kids will no longer be able to do. And so I think that's a pretty tragic thing.
Wait, they will no longer be able to do because there will not be a sheet of ice there. There'll be water.
Correct. Yeah.
There's going to be cruise ships up there pretty soon.
Yeah, and there already are, actually. In the summertime, there's a Russian icebreaker that breaks the ice to the North Pole, and that wouldn't have been possible. As individuals, we have the ability to make a lot of change, and we just need to be reminded that we have that ability to do the right thing.
I guess you have GPS that tells you when, in fact, you've reached the North or South Pole, or is that barber pole sticking in the ground, and does your compass spin around?
Yeah, at the South Pole, there is a barber pole because there's actually an American base at the geographic South Pole. So after, you know, nearly 2 months of skiing, you see trucks driving around and people, and that's a strange juxtaposition after just staring at white nothingness. But the Arctic Ocean, there's nothing there. And so, yes, we do use a GPS to find the North Pole. But as I said earlier, that ice is moving. And so when we get to the North Pole and stop, I can actually watch the numbers on my GPS change as we drift with that moving ice.
That part of the conversation is amazing to me. We had a chance to visit just before the show today. Eric Larson is traveling at this moment, and he'll be in Chicago tomorrow at McCormick Place for this outside adventure event that they've got, a bunch of speakers and things for you to see and do and buy. But the idea that you'd get near the North Pole, go to sleep, and the next morning realize that the spot you were on has drifted 2 miles in the wrong direction would be discouraging. It's 10:58 into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. The stories that matter are coming up. Steve Bertrand kept saying, "You're setting a trap for me, John." What's he talking about? It's the Mincing Rascals podcast broadcast right after the news. Some local stories and some smart folks debating them, and we'll get to that after this. 11:10 in the morning. Thank you, Maple. This is John Williams. In the next half hour, we'll ask you if you like the idea of the ICE agents rounding up some 2,000 people, they think, tonight and through this coming week. If they're here illegally, I could see you making the case that, well, then we should go get them. But maybe you feel otherwise. So how do you feel about these ICE raids after the 11:30 edition of WGN Radio News? The Mincing Rascals is a podcast we record here on Thursdays. The Illinois Broadcasters Association this year judged it the best podcast in the state. Normally it features Eric Zorn. Mr. Zorn couldn't be with us this week, but Steve Bertrand was from our newsroom. And we are also joined by Kim Gordon from the newsroom and the Tribune's editorial cartoonist Scott Stantis. In fact, it's Scott and Kim that you'll hear first reacting to that alligator that everybody's talking about. We'll only give you about 30 seconds of them on this, but we start with them talking about the name that we've given the alligator and how Scott Stantis, the cartoonist, would draw it. See, here he's just hearing them for the first time, too.
I didn't know what you were talking
Chance
about.
Chance the Snapper.
Chance the Snapper is maybe the best.
That's the best one.
You've got to put a number three hat on him.
Oh, of course.
Assume that it could live through the winter. And the way the climate is changing, soon he'll be able to. I like the idea of that guy just on
it's
the
like
road.
It's like Chicago's Loch Ness Monster.
Kind of. Well played. Yeah. In fact, there you go. We should call it some derivation of Nessie or something like that. But there's a guy out there that's trying to catch him. I guess somebody had it as a pet. It got too big. They released it into Humboldt Park's pond, and so there it lives today. So if you're listening to us, Chance the Snapper, Godspeed, sir. We wish you
and we promise we won't use you in the alligator sausage, A Taste of Chicago, so it's okay to come out.
The CTA is expected to roll out soon buttons for pregnant women. This was a hot topic on the radio this week. The buttons would indicate that the wearer is pregnant and encourage others to give that person a seat. Now, this is a rocky road that ends in a good place, but oh, the issues that are associated with it. Do you like this idea?
Well, I do like the idea, but then the other part of me is got this thinking, just mind your manners, people. If you see somebody who's pregnant, get up.
Yeah, but as a man, sometimes you want to, you're not sure. And you say,
Yes, it has happened to me on occasion. I get that. But I think it's nice. I mean, it's tough for pregnant ladies, especially in this heat, walking around the city.
Some people early in their pregnancy don't show much either, but they're not feeling well. They could use a break, so the button would indicate that.
As a gentleman, I will, if a lady comes in, I'll stand up and give her
any
my seat.
Lady?
Yeah.
I was thinking about this on the L today, and everybody had their nose in their lap looking down at a device. If a woman or an old person or a pregnant lady was on there, we would all say, we always will defer to them. You don't if you don't notice.
There's a woman 15 years younger than you gets on the L, you're going to get up and give her your seat?
Yeah. Throw it under the seats?
I wouldn't do that.
That's why he's moving back to Alabama.
Right. I guess so. What do you think of that, Kim?
I think it's a very nice thing to do. And I may say, oh, that's really nice of you. Thank you. I'm fine to stand. So stay where you are.
You think a man should automatically give a seat up to a woman?
No, but if somebody offers, I think it's a very nice gesture.
Wait, watch this. Hey, Steve, do you think a man should automatically give up a seat to a woman?
He does this stuff just because he knows it's a trap.
Go ahead.
No, I don't.
It's not a trap.
I don't think a man should automatically give up for a woman.
Okay. And I know we're going to talk about women's soccer and,
Hey,
Steve, you think women should be paid the same as men?
For the same job? Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, I guess there's a certain symmetry to all that.
But so you sort of laid this trap for me on the air, too. I will certainly get up for people who are older than me, men or women.
Do you think the truth is a perjury trap?
Do you think you could let me finish a thought?
Go ahead.
I don't think that I would not automatically get up for a woman if she's 10 years younger than me or something. I don't think we're there anymore. And I don't think I should be made to feel badly for that. Now, if it's someone who's older, someone who needs, who's got bags in her hands or a kid in her hands, obviously, yes. But we're either moving forward with gender equality or we're not.
Okay. All right, let's be specific. A 50-year-old guy is sitting in a seat. A 30-year-old woman. I mean, I think if the ages are considerable or the circumstances are very stark, then it's more obvious. But a 50-year-old guy is sitting there and a 30-year-old woman gets on, meaning that she's able and fit and she doesn't have any immediate need other than protocol for Steve's sake.
And she's not pregnant.
And she's not pregnant. Okay. She's just a nice lady and she's 28 now. I've just made her 28.
Okay.
And the guy sitting there is 52. Should he get up? And in fact,
if he gets up, he'd be made to feel like he's hitting on her. He'd be in trouble for flirting with a younger woman.
No, I usually, I ask too. I said, do you want the seat? 9 times out of 10, they're saying, no, that's okay.
And so we were talking about opening doors on the air too, another trap you set for me. And I will open the door for people of either gender.
Me too.
Yeah. I don't think it's
I think manners are still, it's okay to still have manners.
Let's do it a different way then. A woman called on John's show and she was 35. She was 42. And she went to a concert at the Green Mill. And she said, all these older people were there and no one would get up for me. Finally, a guy got up and gave me a seat. And I said, how old was he? And she said, what, about 56?
He was white-haired.
Yeah. So an old man got up and gave this younger woman her seat.
Okay. First of all, 56 isn't old.
Whatever. I'm 50, I'm 56.
Right. You're not old.
I don't think she should think she's entitled to an old guy's seat just because she's a woman.
Right. I mean,
you did it again, man. You just sucked me in.
If you sometimes offer the seat to a woman, you're saying that you are needier than I am. Why? Because you're a woman. Well, isn't that an old conceit?
I don't think there's a right or wrong answer here. I think it's what you feel comfortable with as a man, but as a woman, and maybe I'm showing my age because I'm 54 and I appreciate it when someone offers me a seat or opens the door for me, and maybe somebody who's 28 doesn't feel it the same way I do.
Oh, no, I can tell you, working in buildings, obviously with elevators, and I hold the door, and I'm in the front of the elevator, and it opens, and I hold it for the women to leave.
Isn't it funny too?
They start to stare at you, especially the much younger ones, kind of like, what's he doing?
Okay. Is that okay? Chivalry's still alive.
So buttons, yes or no? Kim, you're in charge of buttons for the CTA. Should we make them readily available to women, and if they're pregnant, they can wear them?
Sure.
The governor of the state of Illinois has disinvited a band to perform at the DuQuoin State Fair. The name of the band is Confederate Railroad, and they come on to stage with, among other things, I guess, a Confederate flag, and their name is Confederate Railroad.
And I saw stars dancing on the water. I heard Elvis singing Blue Suede Shoes.
Sounds lovely, but they can't perform in DuQuoin because the word Confederate, and, I get the governor's point, but the language he used to denounce them was overkill.
We talked about this last week or the week before when it comes to the Betsy Ross flag. We cannot allow the racists and the bigots and the worst of us to take our symbols. And the Confederate flag is one of those symbols. Whether you like it or not, it's come to stand for a lot more than just the Confederacy. And I think the governor made a big mistake in doing this.
Wait a minute. So what does it stand for besides the Confederacy?
Well, you tell me, Scott.
I hate the battle flag. I hate it with a passion.
Give me your best, though.
To be a Confederate is to be a Southerner, to be a rebel, to be of that land. I mean, you're from the South. You know that.
I always thought of it as a negative symbol.
No, but I think some people see it as a righteous rebel. I'm not against America. I'm actually very much for America, but my vision of it, and it's not a racist, bigoted one. I mean, that's what I think some people...
I would challenge you to look at every white supremacist, racist, segregationist march from 1900 till today and tell me what flag is being flown.
I'm not arguing that point. I'm just saying what's the best version of it.
The Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah,
right?
That was General Lee.
Good old boys.
I'm sorry, but I understand what you're saying, that the racists are using the flag, but I thought a lot of non-racists also flew that flag. There's a Confederate Memorial Day in the South.
Yeah, there is. Don't celebrate Lincoln's birthday when I went to school in Texas, but they do celebrate Jefferson Day.
So I'm wrong. So do you think the governor should have banned the spin?
What's the message of the music?
They're not a fringe band.
And I'll bet their songs aren't about racism and singing about the virtues of exclusion. I'll bet that they are just trying to tap into the Southern vibe, and the Confederate flag is a prop for
that. I'm thinking of Sweet Home Alabama and Lynyrd Skynyrd. Were there not Confederate flags being waved in the crowd there? Or were those white supremacists.
So, Steve, you're arguing on behalf of
I'm an upside-down world, I guess.
You're now for the Confederate flag being a prop for the
well,
band.
Well, here's the thing.
Or at least the governor not kicking them out because of it.
The governor is not being even on both sides because he is allowing Snoop Dogg to come play at the State Fair in Springfield, and he has a picture, I guess, on an album with
a dead guy on the toe tag. It says Trump.
Yes.
That's
and that's
good.
Being allowed.
So my concern.
So is that fair?
How do you do one and not the other?
Right.
I don't know that they're exactly opposites of each other, but that's certainly distasteful. And maybe that's the problem. If you start to go down the road judging the appropriateness of bands and images, you'll not have anybody there.
Fans are always out of the box. You know, they're always going to push the envelope.
Hi, I'm the governor. Welcome to the State Fair. Here is Up With People.
God, I remember one of their songs. Oh, my
Donnie
God.
Donnie and Marie.
I love them
kids.
At the Super Bowl.
I love the lyric of Up With People. Their theme song is Up, Up With People. You meet them wherever you go.
I'm sorry that you know that, Scott. I am too.
Why? Okay, so one more time, can I go at this? So you think that the band should change its name because
not the name. I would not use the flag. I think it's offensive. It's anathema.
No, you're the governor now. What do you do?
No, I know. He's a Southerner. I'm asking Scott as a person because I value him more as a person than as the governor.
Okay, thank you. Maybe. I don't like the flag. The name of the group. I have a problem with the Confederacy. I've always had a problem with this, you know, this Southern edict of holding on to that flag and that war and the traitors who fought in it.
I would not kick him out the State Fair or the DuQuoin State Fair. Would you have?
No, I would not.
Would
have.
You have?
No, I think that it's an idea. It's a symbol, and if people are offended by it, don't go.
What if you ask them to leave the flag at home? Would you still allow them to come?
Still the Confederate Railroad.
Yeah.
Go ahead and finish that thought.
Well, I'm just trying to sort out my own where I think about this because I am for taking down a lot of the statues. But I don't like the idea of erasing things or making things absolutely forbidden now. And I don't like the Confederate flag. I don't think it should fly above state capitals. And I don't like the idea of disappearing it either.
No, but the statues, when I worked at Memphis, Tennessee, they had a statue of Bedford Forrest downtown. Bedford Forrest was the founder, say it with me, kids, of the KKK.
Yeah. Well, see, that goes. In my world, that goes.
I just want to know from Scott before we wrap up, what is the thing you love most about Chicago?
Oh, my gosh.
You're going to miss this the most because you're moving to Alabama.
I've been thinking about that a lot.
There's no little offbeat thing that even in your daily life, like, what am I really going to miss about
Club
that?
Lago is owned by two brothers, Guido and Giancarlo Nardini. Well, that's a place that you go and they know you. And I've actually vacationed with Giancarlo. I'd say.
People that use TripAdvisor were asked what's the number one destination for a single tour, and the architecture boat tour in Chicago was ranked the second best tour in the world, second only to tours of the Vatican and the Sistine Chapel.
Wow. It's stunning.
This city is stunning.
I came here and not knowing as much as I should have, and one of the monikers we have for Chicago is the Paris of the Midwest. I went, well, that sounds like a bunch of crap. What could that mean? And then after taking the architecture tour, just walking around, and you turn a corner, and oh my God, there's a Calder. Oh my God, there's a Chagall. I mean, how many people know that there's a Chagall mosaic mural down near City Hall?
I don't know that I knew that. Scott Stantis, part of the editorial staff over at the Chicago Tribune. Obviously, he's moving south. You'll still see his work a few times a week in the Chicago Tribune, but he's also part of our Mincing Rascals podcast, reflecting on some of the things that are great about this city and just how beautiful the downtown is. Apropos of that, as we were saying that, I happened to have CNN up on the studio here, and Mayor Lori Lightfoot was talking to CNN's anchors about the raids that are going to take place in Chicago today, and the protest about that, which is underway right now. And the backdrop of our city just looked gorgeous. It was such a juxtaposition, right? Because there she is talking about this unfortunate thing that's going to happen late tonight, early tomorrow morning. here in Chicago, and then this beautiful sunny city with tour boats going up and down the river behind her. In fact, that's something I want to talk to you about in a minute on WGN. Hi, well, here I am just talking to Viv, my producer, off the air, and now I think I'll talk on the air. What would that be in my job and all? You know, I've just been reading this editorial for the Chicago Sun-Times today. It says, they grew up watching Sesame Street in English and attended American schools and colleges. They are true nieces and nephews of Uncle Sam in every way except in how they got here. And most Americans would be good with that, too. Before hauling away men and women who came here illegally, but get up every day to do the menial jobs that Americans that make the American economy hum, the Trump administration might want to consult with the tens of thousands of businesses that rely on these workers. Before breaking up immigrant families in Pilsen and Little Village, hauling off mothers and fathers while children cry, the Trump administration might first want to grant citizenship to some 700,000 undocumented young men and women who were brought to this country as small children. They say as many as a couple thousand people are expected to be rounded up in Chicago starting tomorrow. And then this statistic that I mentioned earlier, and I don't know if this surprises you or not. According to a study by New American Economy, a bipartisan research group, a fifth of the country's cooks and 24% of the maids and house cleaners are undocumented. 36% of all agricultural workers are undocumented. I don't know what it is for roofers, landscapers, house cleaners, but I'll bet it's in that neighborhood, maybe higher still. You know, the question I have for you, we'll pause here. Maple's going to do the news and then answer this question for me. Are you anxious for them to do this? Are you excited? That's the wrong word. Are you pleased that ICE agents in Chicago are going to go to Pilsen and Little Village and other neighborhoods in the city and suburbs? They have lists, they have addresses, and they're going to go get those people. Are you glad about that, or do you wish they would not do that? That's all I'm asking, and you can tell me after the news. It's 11:28. This is WGN.
At 6:35, a big-time behavior symposium coming to Chicago, and I'm honored to be a part of it. You know what? Admission is free.
Steve Dale's Pet World tomorrow morning at 6:30 on 720 WGN.
XYZ Heating and Cooling.
My air conditioner quit and...
Hold, please. Service.
My air conditioner broke, and I need service this morning.
Sorry, the soonest we can have a tech at your house is late tomorrow, and there would be an overtime charge in addition to our travel charge.
Yikes! Bye.
Hi, it's Dick Hochschild, owner of American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, with my wife Elizabeth.
When your air conditioner breaks, you want it fixed right and right now.
At American Weathermakers, we're the 60-minute men. If you have no cooling, we'll be at your home in 60 minutes or give you a free $60 gift card for the repair.
And we never charge for travel or overtime while offering a lifetime warranty on our repairs.
Plus, we have the best prices on the top furnace and air conditioner brands every day.
American Weathermakers, we won't be comfortable until you are.
Call toll free.
855-955-HVAC.
For details, visit AmericanWeathermakers.com or call 855-955-HVAC.
The remarkable Indonesia Fair is not to be missed. With exhibitions, bazaar, and fashion show, bring your friends and family to the largest event about Indonesia at Lakeview Terrace Navy Pier in Chicago. It's free of charge on Saturday, July 13th, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Huh, I see we're getting calls. Is it something I said? If you want to join us, you can call or text 312-981-7200. Are you glad or not glad that in Chicago ICE agents are going out tonight? It's funny, too, because if I was an undocumented person in this country in Chicago right now, I think this would be a real good time to go to Springfield. You know, if you get caught, it's not like you didn't have fair warning. 11:38, Amy Guth will say hi a little before noon. White Sox baseball later on, and a beautiful day in Chicago, and a big rally down at the Federal Plaza, downtown Chicago, protesting in advance of the raids that are supposed to take tonight. By the way, somebody texted in and said, hey, what was that article John was reading? The one with the statistics about how many undocumented workers are working for people like you and me? That's the editorial in today's Chicago Sun-Times, the one that said that a fifth, 20% of the cooks in this country, 20% of the cooks in this country are undocumented. One-fourth of the maids and house cleaners are undocumented. Over a third of all agricultural workers, who picked your strawberry? If you ate three, one of them was picked by an undocumented. It's in the Chicago Sun-Times today. It's their editorial. They close it this way. As long as the president thinks ICE raids might help him get reelected, we are going to get ICE raids. So resist. Go to a rally protesting the raids. Support Mayor Lightfoot's refusal to allow the Chicago police or any city agency to work with ICE. If you're an undocumented immigrant, don't answer the door. ICE agents cannot enter your home without a warrant from a judge. They might have one, though. Wholesale raids on immigrant families on a Sunday morning are not the American way. As Americans, we know that, said the Sun-Times. I agree with a lot of that. You may feel differently. That's why we've opened up the phone lines and why I have pages of texts in front of me now. But I don't like people being here illegally, and they should not be here without proper documentation. I don't know what we're going to do about that, but there are 11 million or more undocumented people in this country. And we're going to round up a few thousand of them this weekend and terrorize the whole nation. And that's not going to solve the problem. That doesn't make it go away. And this is really selfish, but I've never been bothered by one. I don't see the harm in them. If you said the person picking the strawberry or cleaning my hotel room or roofing my house is here without papers, generally I've had a clean room and fresh vegetables and my roof doesn't leak. I wish those people had documentation. I don't wish that we were rounding them up with their children crying in the background as they're hauled away and maybe they take the kids with them. That's what I don't want. 815 said, where can I read that story? It was in the Sun-Times. 630 says, fact is, they're here illegally because the length of time they're here does not transform them otherwise. Fact is, they are illegal. 630 said, this reminds me of the Nazis rounding up the Jews. It's a horrible way to repeat history. 815 said, the criminals only, not the hardworking families trying to have a good life. But many of you say, what would happen if you tried to barge into Mexico or Canada without a passport? They're here and they're illegal. Okay, here we go. Gird your loins. Andy, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
Yeah, just I'm a Latino. My dad came here from Puerto Rico in 1953. And, you know, there's been a lot of writing about Epstein's charges, you know, calling them underage women when the real word for that is raping children, and I agree with that. And I think the issue here is that calling these raids on immigrants is so wrong. It's raids on Latinos. Trump made a veiled threat during all of his campaign, and he continues to his base, his racist base. Not everyone that supports Trump is a racist, but he has a large support from white supremacists, and this veiled threat was that he was going to get rid of Mexicans. And that's what he's doing. These are not raids on immigrants. They're not going after Polish immigrants. They're not going after Canadians that are here illegally. They're only targeting Latinos. And that's the problem. This borders on hate crimes, in my opinion. They're just going after one group of people, similar to what you just said with Hitler. When they run out of Latinos, they're going to find another group to get rid of. Gays, lesbians,
all right, Andy.
Muslims.
Andy, I hear you loud and clear, my friend. I got a lot of calls.
Sir, okay, just wanted to get that out. Thank you.
Andy, you spoke your piece. I'm glad you joined us. We'll go from Andy to Dean. You're on WGN Radio. Dean, what did you want to say? You're on the air.
Hi, John. Well, first, I want to say is I'm not happy about the raid, but I'm not totally sad about it either. I just heard Andy. I can understand Andy's point. But at the end of the day, they made a choice to come over to take that risk. And with risk comes consequences. If I choose not to pay my taxes, I have that risk of being arrested. We don't get to pick what laws we want to follow or we don't follow. Because then what's the next step? When do we stop? We have to follow the laws that are in the books. And the laws is you are illegal. It's undocumented. It sounds like they lost their documentation that they need to find it. It's simple. We've made it sound nice, but it's not. And it doesn't matter if it's Hispanic, Guatemalan, Canadian. I just happen to be of Italian descent. My relatives came over legally. That's what they did. They followed the law, the rule.
Yeah.
When you lose the law, when you lose the follow the laws on the books, and we get to pick as a society which ones, then where do we stop?
That's the point and counterpoint on this conversation today. Dean, I'm glad you're listening. Thanks for the call. I'm going from Dean to Pete. You're on WGN. Pete, what do you want to say? You're
Hello?
On the air. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, yeah, I agree with kind of both of these last two callers. You know, the one that said his family's from Italy. But let's not forget the 30s when there was a lot of illegal Italians who kind of with the bootlegging tore this city up and gave it a bad rap. You know, and we keep talking about Pilsen and Little Village. Chicago is the second largest Polish population, second out of Warsaw. When I was growing up in Cicero in the 80s, all my friends, real good friends, were Polish descent, and all of them were undocumented. But that didn't mean they didn't pay their taxes. They filed for taxes. They used the fake social or whatever. They didn't get a refund. All that money went to the government, and they never gave it back, overpaid taxes. So these raids, I do agree with the first caller. It's not just about illegals and undocumented. It's attacking one race to build up momentum for his next election.
I appreciate the call, Pete. We go from Pete to Ethel. Thanks for joining us, Ethel. You're on WGN. What do you want to say?
Yes, hello. I called because it just made me sick to my stomach when I heard that the roundups are going to start. I have a master's degree in Jewish education from Spertus College on Michigan Avenue in Chicago, Illinois. And, yes, this does remind me of the Nazis. Some of my family were murdered in Russia. I'm 62 years old. And it is just singling out the Mexican people. And why isn't the government, the United States government, putting their time and money into taking care of those children, those infants that they've put in the detention camps? It seems to be a waste of time and money, which is typical of the Trump administration. This is the land of the free and the home of the brave, and we need to stand up and not allow this to happen. If you don't allow it to happen, it will not happen.
Ethel, thank you for the phone call. This texter from 815 says, open borders, let everybody in, do whatever they want, and then pay for their food, their homes, their medical. Oops, then we'd have no more country. Said an 815 texter on line 5. Kim, you're on WGN. Kim, what did you want to say? Hi.
Yeah, I'd like to say that I was looking over my grandfather's naturalization papers from 1918, and he came over the right way, okay? As far as taking these people, sending them back to Mexico, take them and put them in naturalization classes. Let them learn to be an American.
All right, Kim, hold on. But Kim, you're saying two things here. Language. Hear me out, Kim. So are you saying don't round them up and send them back? Don't try and capture all 11 or 26 million of them, but rather identify them and then make them citizens, let them stay?
Exactly.
Okay. Lots of calls, Kim, and I'm glad you got in. I think that, listen, Kim, when I get to be king, you will be in charge of that, because who doesn't embrace that? I mean, my goodness, as a practical matter, you can't do it. And as a function of the economy, you don't want to do that. So let's figure that out instead of literally getting paddy wagons roaming down some of the West Side streets trying to round these people up. Does that make sense? This is line 3. Jefferson, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi.
Hi, John. John, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for calling.
I don't know, man. I'm lost on what people don't understand about the word illegal. This is not a Latino thing. This is not a Hispanic thing. We don't know who's going to get rounded up. And I'm all for the rounding up. These folks, this is not, you know, ICE just throwing a dart at a map and penetrating a neighborhood or a particular workplace. These people that are being targeted were given deportation papers and they've avoided it. I just don't understand what you and the mayor, especially the mayor as a former federal prosecutor, what part of this don't you understand? I don't get that. These are people who have violated the law. This is not, you know, sweeps of Taste of Chicago or just random checks at a shopping mall. These are people that were issued papers.
So everybody
exit the country.
Right. Okay, well, you're educating
me. Give
me
an answer on that. I don't get that. You haven't addressed that this morning.
No, I haven't, and you're educating me here. So everybody that's going to get hit up tonight and tomorrow morning.
Well, that's what I've read in the paper. Now, you know,
I did not know that. I thought they had identified people who are here without documentation, illegally, and that they were going to round them up. Now, if they've all been issued, and you're telling me they have been, deportation papers, I don't know what those are. I'm a little surprised to hear that. And even then, suppose we found the mailing addresses for 20 million undocumented immigrants in this country, and we sent them those papers. Mm-hmm. Here's what I don't understand. What are you going to do about that? How do you propose that we get 20 million buses and drive them all to Mexico and dump them off there? I mean, what's that going to do? Is that what you think we should do?
Well, I think we can start with 2,000.
Yeah, well, that's what they're going to do tonight. I sure appreciate your listening, Jefferson. As I like to say, we got a real big bus here at WGN, and I got room for everybody. And boy, we're hearing from it all. It's 11:49 on WGN. 11:52 on WGN. You know, some of you are asking questions I don't have the answers to. Some of them aren't answerable, but I noticed that there were a lot of, like, Q&As in the Sun-Times and Tribune today. Can someone seek sanctuary in a church? The answer is legally ICE can enter a space like a church or school. They don't want to kick those doors in, but if they do, they can do so legally. And then there's tips. For instance, what are potential deportees being encouraged to do? And the answer is take photographs and video recording of any ICE activity. Targeted parents are also being encouraged to have child care plans in place in case they're taken into custody. Which leads to a couple of texts. One of you said this: having our lawmakers and law enforcers give advice on how to continue to break the law is despicable. It's against the oath they took. 630 said, I was going to suggest everyone watch Schindler's List this weekend. 847 said, I'm very much against ICE going after undocumented immigrants. It's cruel. It serves no humane purpose. But somebody else pointed out the Obama administration deported more illegal immigrants than Trump. I don't know what the numbers are, but I do know that the Obama administration, under the Obama administration, raids like this also took place. Is that Rosanna Rodriguez, the alderman from the, I think, 33rd Ward, is on line 8. Alderman, this is John Williams. You're on WGN. We have just a few minutes before we go to the news, but where are you right now?
I am actually downtown at Daily Plaza at the demonstration put together by Indivisible, and there's a lot of other organizations here. Congressman Chuy Garcia was just speaking. There's a really good crowd here at the Daily Plaza.
Who are your constituents? Who do you represent, Alderman?
I represent the communities of Albany Park, Irving Park, Ravenswood Manor, and Avondale. Albany Park particularly is a very heavily immigrant neighborhood. We have a lot of undocumented neighbors in that neighborhood, and we are very worried about the upcoming raids.
Do you think ICE agents are literally going to be in your ward knocking on their doors tonight?
I really hope that is not the case, but I want to prepare for it. It would be really sad to lose anybody in our neighborhood. I hope not, but we're preparing for it.
What does that mean? I mean, what are you telling these people to do? I would, you know, I was wondering why.
So we have been canvassing and handing Know Your Rights cards to people, explaining that they have rights, that they don't have to open the door for ICE unless there is an order signed by a judge. A lot of times orders are not signed by a judge, so it's important for people to know the difference. We are also organizing a community defense brigade for tomorrow, where we're going to have neighbors going around in bikes and on foot around the community to make sure that we are keeping an eye out on possible checkpoints, on raids. We can alert the community quickly. We're going to have immigration lawyers at the 33rd Ward Working Families Office on Montrose Avenue in case we have to mobilize a lawyer quickly. And we are also going to have a few people that are behavioral health specialists, like therapists, that can also be on call for any crisis that arises as a result of an arrest.
This is just a remarkable circumstance. You have the city government arming, if you will, with information its citizens on what to do when the federal government, when the federal government comes after the citizens of a city. Now, I just use the word citizens, and that's the biggest problem here, isn't it, Alderwoman? A lot of my listeners are calling and texting and saying, but these people aren't here illegal, are not here legally. They're undocumented. So why should we protect their rights, if you will? What's your answer to that?
Because they are our neighbors, because they are part of our communities, because they deserve to be here, because we have seen throughout history how so many things have been legal. Slavery was legal. So we need to ask ourselves at what point we decide to obey laws that are incredibly inhumane. We are talking about children who go to our schools, that go to school with my child. Those families can be torn apart. Our schools can lose a lot of students. We would lose a lot of people in our communities if this race actually took place. And that is horrible. These people have come here to be able to provide for their families. And this is what any of us would do. Any of us. That's what we would do if we had to, for our children, for our families. So I think that we have to be humane. It's what we need to do, and be in solidarity with our neighbors. And as the alderman of the 33rd Ward, and in conjunction with a lot of other aldermen in the city, Alderman Carlos Ramirez Rosa, Alderman Byron Siccio, Alderman Mike Rodriguez, Andre Vasquez, we are all looking for ways to be able to work with our communities and organize ourselves in order to be able to provide protection for our neighbors. We're all doing it.
Rosanna Rodriguez is an alderman in the Chicago City Council representing the 33rd Ward. Good luck to you today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
It is 11:57. The stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And hello to Amy Guth.